Geekscape.com.
Hello and welcome to Aryan Narrations. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and today will be the fourth reading from Front Camphor by Et Volsink. Sometime later, Et was to face the dreadful sensations of underwater travel again. This time, the journey was considerably longer, as it involved crossing the Atlantic Ocean by U-boat, and to make matters worse, the submarine was of a new experimental type. The U-boat had been hurriedly put to sea from the proving waters in the Baltic and sent down to the French Atlantic coastal bases, where Et and his group joined the vessel. Et recalled that his nervousness was not helped by the attitude of the Kriegsmarine engineering officers on board, who could not be sure that the engines would not explode, since the trial voyage had been rushed and the equipment was not properly tested. Et was sent as part of a group of military escorts to German government officials on a secret diplomatic mission. His ability to speak and read English meant he could also serve as an interpreter if needed. The mission was to Bermuda, and the likely venue of the top-secret meetings which took place was not too far from the home of the Duke of Windsor, the former King Edward VIII. Et was part of the security team which went ashore with the diplomats, landing by inflatable dinghy on an empty beach. Et and the security detachment made the area secure while the talks took place in a large private residence. The full details of those discussions and the purpose of the overall mission were not fully known to Et, and what is known cannot be revealed in this book at this time. The journey to Bermuda was not the only occasion when Et Volsink was involved in military political missions where his knowledge of English was of equal importance to his military skills. Et was also involved as security interpreter on missions to meet British contacts in Spain. English was also useful during his part in missions as one of the military escorts for the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, both in the aftermath of his failed anti-British uprising in Iraq and his tour of Croatia in April 1943, when the Mufti helped to recruit Bosnian Muslims into the new Muslim division of the Waffen-SS. The losses in the Brandenburg division were as high, if not higher, than most Wehrmacht formations at this time, especially on the Eastern Front. In the Kampfer group, of the ZBV 800 losses, especially of junior officers, were very high and replacements difficult to find. Therefore, the Brandenburg frequently promoted very young NCOs and officer cadets to fill the gaps. In the closing months of 1942, Et Volsink was put forward to fill just such a gap. Although he had never completed his time at officers' training school, Et was promoted to the rank of lieutenant. His educational background was deemed sufficient, and his bravery in action was unquestioned. Et was classed as a Tapferkeits officer, promoted in wartime on the grounds of his combat record, both in terms of bravery and frontline experience. Officially, he was 19 years old, but in reality, he was only 17. His promotion left him dizzy with excitement and as proud as a lion. Within the Kampfergruppe he was serving in, there were three officers including himself, the rest of the command structure being made up with sergeants and corporals. Losses were replaced from within the Brandenburg division, never from infantry replacement depots. The replacements were always well-trained specialists, including the foreign language soldiers. Therefore, new personnel quickly settled in, as they were already seasoned soldiers. Knowing each other well, and having confidence in each other as comrades, built strength in the Kampfergruppe, which was necessary on hazardous missions. These units did not serve as regular regiments or battalions on the front lines, but usually found themselves far behind enemy lines, dressed in enemy uniforms. Their only means of communicating with their commanders was by field radio, but they had the best equipment and training available. At the time of his promotion, the Kampfergruppe was operating on three-quarters strength, about 37 men. Ett was the youngest and lowest grade officer in the group. However, he had serious responsibilities on active service. Moreover, Ett's responsibilities as an officer went beyond the operations of his Kampfergruppe. He was answerable, too, to his mentors in the RSHA. Up to the time of his promotion, Ett's instructions from the RSHA had been sparse. He had been forbidden to discuss his RSHA connections with anyone outside the RSHA, especially with his Brandenburg comrades or other Wehrmacht officers. In turn, he was forbidden to discuss his service in the Brandenburg with his family or anyone outside the ZBV 800. The first operation after his promotion was an infiltration action about 20 miles into Soviet-held territory. The Kampfergruppe was to eliminate the high command center of retreating enemy forces in that sector, bringing back the senior officers as prisoners for interrogation and creating confusion in the enemy's rear. The location of the Red Army command center was provided by the Divisional Operations Office, which in turn received its intelligence information from the Abwehr. The infiltration of the Soviet lines was an easy task for the Brandenburgers, dressed as usual in captured enemy uniforms, the journey to the target area being relatively uneventful. The surprise attack on the Red Army base was successful. The Kampfergruppe took 6 high-ranking officers prisoner and liquidated the rest of the base staff. This was a necessary measure, as the Kampfergruppe had to move quickly and could not cope with large numbers of prisoners. The unit was now faced with the task of transporting its prisoners and its own personnel back to the safety of the German lines. To make matters more difficult, there were several wounded among the Brandenburgers. The Kampfergruppe medical orderly patched up the wounded men so that they were able to travel, while the rest of the group secured transport. Among the vehicles at the Soviet command center were 2 large trucks with enough fuel on hand to carry the 40-odd men back to the line. Before leaving, the Brandenburgers destroyed all the remaining communications equipment at the command center, reducing the risk of Soviet units being alerted in the front-line area. The group moved out of the target area and began their withdrawal. After some distance, the trucks drew near to a canal and were heading for the nearest bridge when the sound of gunfire brought the group to a halt. The Hauptmann, commanding the Kampfergruppe, ordered the radio operators to find out what was going on as they were still some distance behind enemy lines. After some difficulty, the situation became clear. There was another German unit operating in the area, not, however, another Brandenburg unit. Inevitably, in a sector where the front was shifting from day to day, a Waffen-SS Stroßtrupp, aggressive reconnaissance unit of small numbers, had launched a raid into enemy territory to prevent the Red Army from blowing up the bridge during their retreat. To make matters worse, the SS unit had no communications equipment and knew nothing about the Brandenburg Kampfergruppe withdrawing through that area. The Brandenburg Hauptmann was less than pleased at this information. Ett recalls hearing him swear in Polish at the news, "Pizza Peronja." The officer was probably of Polish origins. Not only did the Kampfergruppe face the prospect of attack by Red Army units defending the bridge, but now faced the danger of being shot at by its own side. A firefight with the Waffen-SS was not a pleasant prospect. The assembled Brandenburgers stripped off their Red Army uniforms to reveal the German camouflage suits underneath and prepared themselves for action. The precious group of prisoners were quickly bandaged up to look like heavily wounded men, and their mouths were gagged as a precaution. The bulk of the group was to stay with the prisoners, while Ett drew the dubious honour of taking a squad of 12 men to establish contact with the Waffen-SS unit. A difficult situation, since Ett and his squad would be approaching the SS from the least likely direction, from the rear of a superior enemy defensive position. Ett remembers that on this occasion, he was extremely wary, Although he had learned not to panic in tight situations, he considered this action very hazardous. His group were equipped for rapid close-quarter fighting, armed with Sten guns, hand grenades and combat knives. Advancing quickly and keeping close to the ground, they used their knives to dispatch some Russians who blocked their path, rather than alert the rest of the enemy by shooting. After covering some distance, they reached a point from which they could see the SS unit's positions. The SS troops were advancing across the small bridge under heavy fire from a large group of Russian defenders. Ett decided to help the SS attack by breaking cover and attacking the Russians from behind. Ett's group moved forward quickly, firing as they went, cutting down the startled Russians. So rapid was the action that Ett and his men suddenly found themselves facing fire from the SS advancing across the bridge. He would have to act quickly to prevent casualties from the German fire. He climbed onto the back of one of his men and was lifted up high enough to be seen clearly, calling out in German, "Heil Hitler, comrades! We are Brandenburgers, returning from a mission." The shouted message reached the vanguard of the SS attack, and they understood the unusual situation. The firing stopped, from the German side, at least. Unfortunately, there were still Russian defenders scattered around the bridge. The action quickly turned into close combat fighting. Ett's group were now only using their combat knives and pistols to prevent stray shots hitting their SS comrades, who were likewise attacking the enemy now only with knives, bayonets and pistols, for the same reasons. The remaining Russians were about 25 in number, armed only with single-shot rifles and no heavy weapons. They were surrounded. If they had been equipped with machine guns, then Ett's small group would have been wiped out. But finding themselves trapped on both sides by German troops, the bridge defenders began to panic. Those on the bridge began to throw themselves into the canal in an attempt to escape, allowing the SS and Ett's group to use their automatic weapons once again. The Russians were quickly annihilated. The immediate problem of contacting the SS had now been solved, but the larger problem of withdrawing the Kampfgruppe to German territory still remained. Ett sent two men back to inform the Hauptmann that the bridge was captured and the SS were aware of the Brandenburgers' presence. There was the need to act quickly before the enemy could rush extra units into the area. While the SS troops were mopping up the last remaining Russian swimmers in the canal, Ett made contact with his opposite number in the SS unit. A young SS Untersturmführer greeted Ett with a Hitler salute and asked him, "So you have done some sightseeing?" Hearing the arrival of the Hauptmann and the trucks, Ett answered, "Yes, and my touring cars are here." The light-hearted mood soon vanished, as Ett explained their mission and how far they still needed to travel. The Hauptmann came over to inspect the situation at the bridge and received the reports from Ett and the Untersturmführer. The young SS officer reported his name, rank, number of men and mission. The Hauptmann had halted the trucks at the approach to the bridge. He requested that the SS troops assist his men in clearing the obstacles and Russian corpses so they could cross. But first, the demolition charges had to be disarmed and removed. The explosive experts, among the Brandenburgers, were better able to deal with the demolition charges than the SS troops, and the bridge was quickly made safe. The SS officer had orders to hold the bridge until the main force arrived, so in order to assist the Brandenburgers, he assigned two of his NCOs to guide the trucks back along the shortest and safest route back. Ett and his squad of 12 men stayed behind with the SS as a rearguard group. The Brandenburg trucks had moved off with swastika flags draped across the bonnets to avoid being fired upon when they reached the German lines. It was not long before the Hauptmann safely reached the German lines and handed over his prisoners. This mission accomplished, the Brandenburgers immediately joined the advancing SS unit to rescue the group holding the bridge. The situation at the bridge, in the meantime, had become difficult. the Russians were counter-attacking to recapture it, so that retreating Russian units could escape across the canal. Although Etz Group only had light weapons, the SS Stroustrup had both light and heavy machine guns, particularly the excellent MG-42, the Hitler Saw. There were some casualties in the face of mass enemy attacks, but the mixed SS and Brandenburg force held onto the bridge for several hours, bitterly contesting every inch of ground in the face of greater odds. The spearhead of the relieving force arrived in the shape of a detachment of tanks and then a full infantry division, forcing the Russians to fall back along the canal and find another escape route. Among the infantry force was the Brandenburg Kampfgruppe, and the Hauptmann was quick to link up with Ett and his squad. There was little time for celebration, though. The Kampfgruppe had new orders, and had to travel quickly to the nearest rail junction for reassignment to another sector. As they drove to the railhead in their trucks, Ett and his men were able to celebrate with stocks of captured food and drink, as well as catch up on much-needed rest. The newly promoted lieutenant found himself on a special mission, as he was sent to Berlin from the Brandenburg depot for a special private meeting with SS Gruppenführer Walter Schellenberg of the RSHA/SD. Until Ett became an officer, his life had simply revolved around obey and fight without question. Now Gruppenführer Schellenberg set about changing Ett's simple code of service to the Reich. Schellenberg explained that the Brandenburg was an instrument of the Abwehr, the Wehrmacht intelligence service, completely in the power of Admiral Canaris, which excluded any influence by Reichsführer Himmler and the SS. The SS planned to change this situation in the future, and had established a shadow organization, which cooperated with the Abwehr, but would one day replace it. From now on, Ett would report any rumor, Abwehr directive or anti-Hitler activity in the Brandenburg directly to the Geheimfeldpolizei, which would in turn report this to the RSHA. Ett was informed that his next mission was to be part of an escort group for a special Canaris operation behind the Soviet lines. The Abwehr was sending a group of negotiators for a meeting with the leading members of the Red Orchestra. This shadowy communist organization was technically controlled by Soviet military intelligence, but was dominated by exiled German Jewish communists. The Red Orchestra specialized in infiltrating espionage and sabotage teams deep behind German lines and even into the cities of the Reich itself. Often, they would link up with underground communist groups in Germany and communist agents planted in the Wehrmacht. Naturally, the RSHA and Himmler himself were deeply suspicious about any dealings Canaris might have with the Red Orchestra and expected a full report from Ett about the mission. Fully briefed by Schellenberg, Ett returned to the Brandenburg depot. The Canaris mission was not long in being put into operation. Ett received his orders and was transported to a Luftwaffe airbase to join the rest of the mission team. The mission itself was lightly equipped, and it was obviously not intended to be involved in heavy infantry fighting. 4 transport aircraft took off and flew to a deserted area about 100 miles from Moscow, technically behind German lines, but in reality in the heart of a huge area controlled by Soviet partisans. This particular region was held by forces of the Red Orchestra, and despite the best efforts of Wehrmacht security units and SS Einsatzgruppen, the Red Orchestra was well organized and raiding deep into German supply lines. The German security forces were overstretched and inadequate in numbers to deal with such vast reaches of territory, so Canaris and the Abwehr had decided to try a different approach and negotiate. The 4 German aircraft had easily penetrated the Soviet airspace by cover of a diversionary maneuver carried out by Wehrmacht ground forces. There was no anti-aircraft fire, as the partisans lacked such heavy equipment. The German transport planes were all fitted with skis because they were to land on snowfields. On this mission, The RSHA and the Abwehr were cooperating. Ett was part of the security team, guarding three Wehrmacht generals and their staff, plus an SS Gruppenführer and his staff. The aircraft put down on open snowfields, close by a dozen or so snow-covered huts, and almost immediately were surrounded by about 50 armed soldiers wearing old-fashioned Russian winter uniforms. Ett and his group left the plane, shouting the agreed code words, and moved forwards to agreed positions before the negotiators would leave the aircraft. If anything went wrong, the planes would take off immediately, with the negotiators still safely on board. Ett and the security teams would be sacrificed as a rear guard covering their escape. The atmosphere was tense and full of mutual distrust as three men slowly walked out of the huts and came towards Ett and his men. The trio walked up to Ett in silence, and both sides introduced themselves without shaking hands or any other feigned niceties. Ett found himself face to face with a feared terrorist enemy, one of the leaders of the Red Orchestra, and possibly its head, a man who used a variety of names, but on this occasion used the name Tenor. Tenor spoke fluent German with a Yiddish accent and politely but morosely discussed and approved the security measures that Ett proposed to take from the moment that the staff officers left the safety of their aircraft. The discussion's over with, and with serious doubts about the situation, Ett walked back to the aircraft and gave clearance for the four generals and their staff to leave the planes and walk to the meeting huts. The officers were screened by 25 of Ett's Brandenburgers. The escort squad had strict instructions to open fire and evacuate the staff officers at the first sign of a double cross. In addition, Ett had assigned a further 15 men to guard the aircraft and landing strip. Meanwhile, he accompanied the staff officers across and into the meeting huts. The main hut was gloomy and hot. The air was heavy with the smell of garlic and unwashed bodies. The Star of David emblem decorated one wall. As the negotiations got underway, Ett continued to organize his men. It was freezing cold outside, so he arranged for a rotation system where groups of three men at a time could come into the shelter of the huts and have a hot drink. Ett's adjutant was in charge of the squad around the aircraft, leaving Ett free to tour all his men and also to listen in on some of the negotiations. The details of the negotiations cannot be revealed in this short account, but one result of the meeting was the agreement that the Red Orchestra would not molest Wehrmacht Red Cross transports in exchange for the extradition of four important Jewish figures currently being held in German camps. The details of the exchange were verified by an SS Oberführer via a direct radio link from one of the aircraft, the RSHA. The four prisoners were of little value to the SS, other than as bargaining counters for just such an exchange. As the negotiations reached their conclusion, Tenor, who seemed disinterested in the formalities, began to speak quietly to Ett in what might pass for conversation. Tenor asked about the Brandenburg, and was not offended when Ett declined to discuss the formation. Tenor told Ett about his own ideology and motivations, how he and the others were fighting to create a separate Jewish state, the Zionist dream of a powerful Israel. The meeting ended, and the generals were escorted back to the aircraft, while the staff officers shook hands with their opposite numbers before joining the planes. The mission was nervously but successfully completed, and the aircraft returned unharmed to the Luftwaffe base from where it began. Ett made his report to the Brandenburg commander, and later sent a separate report to the RSHA, little knowing that he would one day see Tenor again. One of the skills that Ett had learned in the Hitler Youth was skiing, and because he could ski reasonably well, he was among a group of men selected for service in Finland. The Finns were Germany's ally in the war against the Soviet Union, and Kampfergruppen from ZBV 800 were sent to the Finnish Karelia for joint operations against the Russians. Although Ett admitted that the Finns were much better at winter warfare than either the Russians or the Germans, it was during his service in Finland that Ett came to meet Reichsfuhrer SS Heinrich Himmler. Reichsfuhrer Himmler was touring Waffen-SS and other German units serving in the country, and Ed remembered Himmler visiting the officers' mess in his unit area one evening. He recalled that the Reichsfuhrer was very reserved, bourgeois in his tastes and behaviour, compared with the young combat officers such as Ed and his comrades from the Kampfergruppe. Ed's opinion of Himmler was that the Reichsfuhrer was very nice and polite, but did not chase women, did not smoke, nor drink to excess, unlike the young officers in the mess, Kameradschaft. A considerable part of Ed Volsink's wartime service with the ZBV 800 Brandenburg was spent in the Balkans during search and destroy operations against the communist partisans. The regular operations against the partisans were the job of the regular army and police units stationed in those areas. However, for special actions, the services of Brandenburg Kampfergruppen were required. Throughout the Balkans, there were groups of communist partisans, as well as gangs of loosely aligned armed bandits. As in the military campaign, the partisans had an advantage over the regular troops they were fighting. They were well organized, well equipped, and operating out of mountainous districts where they knew every path, every cave, and every hideout. In addition, the partisans could rely on the local population to help them and keep them supplied with food and other supplies, either willingly or under threat. It was very difficult to fight an enemy, often dressed in civilian clothes, who wages a dirty war of snipers, ambushes, and sabotage before disappearing back into the forests and mountains. This was the situation which the Wehrmacht faced without interruption during the whole of the war in the Balkans. The cities and major towns and larger villages were firmly in German and their allies' hands, but the remote districts and long road routes were very insecure. The Russians, in spite of their own problems, always seemed to be able to supply the communist saboteurs with fresh armaments and spares. In Yugoslavia, the partisans had additional supplies parachuted in by the British, as well as materials landed by sea along the Albanian coast. The war against the communist partisans was at its most violent in Yugoslavia, Albania, and northern Greece, but also other areas, including parts of Bulgaria, Romania, and even Hungary, which were all countries allied to the German Reich. If no urgent operations required their presence elsewhere, Ed Volsink's Kampfergruppe was employed in one of several provinces of Yugoslavia, where the main opponent was the Marxist rebel leader Tito. And we'll look at what Ed Volsink got up to in Yugoslavia in the next episode.
You're listening to Radio Aryan at Radio Aryan.